Roger to the victim's house.
Call 5-1.
We had a gun at the time, and we just decided to go cruising. And when we went cruising, we seen another guy from another gang. That was Bartlett. And
Who's that, Joe Burberry?
Did you give him out of your pocket? Stick him up on the counter of your belt. Matt, watches.
The police automatically arrested me for murder, one accessory to a murder, and offering to sell marijuana.
Put your hands on the counter, spread your legs, step back.
I'm in for murder, intent to commit robbery, intent to commit murder.
The Garner Ted Armstrong Program. Radio and television commentator Garner Ted Armstrong brings you the personal stories of juvenile offenders, kids in trouble.
This program is about kids in trouble, real life kids really in trouble, who talk about the way they got into trouble and the kind of trouble they got into. And they tell it exactly the way it happened to them. We're going to take a unique look at the entire problem of juvenile justice in a little different way by letting you hear for the next half hour from individual human lives that have been deeply enmeshed with the juvenile justice system in the United States. First of all, to mention there are three basic categories into which the juvenile justice system classifies these youngsters. The first is the dependent or neglected child. That's one whose case is actually being taken up by the court as against the parent and for the child. The second broad category is the controversial status offender, the runaway, the truant, the curfew violator, the kid beyond the control of his parents, called a status offender because their acts are illegal only when they are still a minor. The third category of young people in the justice system are those charged with acts that would be illegal in any age group, such as murder or robbery, arson, rape, burglary, and the like. We're going to hear first from Pat. Her legal classification is technically that of a dependent or neglected child. However, in the past, she's also been arrested for status offenses, and her story is perhaps a typical one of the so-called status offender.
Why did they arrest you?
Incorrigible runaway.
Why did you run away?
Because my father beat me. I ran away, and then I went to my school counselor because, you know, I had, my fingers were broke and stuff like that. So I went to my school counselor at my school 2 days after I'd run away, and he called the social, while he was calling the social worker for me to come and see me, the police came to the attendance office at the school and arrested me.
Unable to return home, Pat was eventually placed in Rosemary Cottage, a privately operated treatment center for girls. Rosemary Cottage is community-based, reflecting the growing belief that kids in trouble should be helped within the community rather than extracted into an unrealistic institutional setting.
Essentially, our youngsters are kids who have failed persistently in just about everything that they have tried, largely because their families have not given them much emotional support, largely because they have been shunted from place to place, have had a variety of different placement. Their families have been broken up usually. They've been in foster homes. They've been in other institutions.
Well, I was living in a foster home, and I ran away from that because they were constantly putting pressure on me about my boyfriend being black and different things like that, and it was the same hassles I had at home. So I ran away, and I was gone for about 8 months, and then I was arrested and went to juvenile hall, and then I was transferred to McLaren Hall, and then after staying there about a month and a half, my social worker brought me here.
You ran away, said you were gone for 8 months. What were you doing?
Living with my boyfriend. But then I was also afraid of going back to the to the hall and all the things involved there. It's like it was a bad situation where I was, but I was afraid it'd get worse if I turned myself in.
Most of us will say that we'll probably take five boys in a treatment program to one girl any time. Girls are much more difficult to get started with. They are more defensive.
I came out of the hall where I was used to having to have a big mouth and push everybody around and not getting anything. So I acted the same way here and thought I would get something.
It's often important for youngsters to learn that there are causes and effects, that there are sequences to living. And what we attempt to teach is really a step-by-step kind of a pattern of achieving things, of coping, of learning, of doing a job, of finishing a project, of handling a relationship.
Well, in looking back over your life, Pat, do you feel your problems were your parents' fault or your fault?
My parents' fault, because I was at too young of an age to know what I was really doing. I didn't understand the situation. And if my parents would have been strong enough in their relationship, they could have prevented what happened with us. But their relationship wasn't sturdy, so mine couldn't be either.
This is strictly second best. Placement is not a substitute for a home. It is not a substitute for a parental relationship. We can't ever make it come out the same way. We're strictly in the business of doing a repair job, of patching up, of helping as much as possible.
One of the most controversial issues in the entire thing of juvenile justice has been the alleged harsh treatment of teenagers when they run afoul of the law. The treatment of status offenders, principally, has been judged as being overly harsh. But in actual fact, the classification of status offenders is often arbitrary, reflecting only one aspect of the youth's behavior. They may also have been busted, as they say, on any number of other charges, from car theft to shoplifting. So when you hear about status offenders, the runaway, the neglected child, or even how dependent and neglected children are treated or have been treated in their past, remember that the problem may well be far more serious than just the label that is arbitrarily attached to it. We'll be back in a minute to visit with a different type of setting and talk with kids who were involved in some very violent crimes.
Special issue, Youth and Crime. Good News, a magazine for and about people. This Get Acquainted copy examines the problems and challenges of young people everywhere. And it's absolutely free. There's no cost or obligation. Every month you'll receive fresh insight on a wide variety of subjects. If you're not already receiving good news, call this number, 800-423-4444. That's 800-423-4444.
I hope you'll write in, or better yet, call right now to the toll-free number I can give you for your free copy of this special issue of the GN, the Good News on Youth and Crime. I'd like to show you a little bit about it. As a matter of fact, inside there's an interesting article on the place women are beginning to play more and more in the area of crime, a picture of Bonnie, of the famous Bonnie and Clyde, and the gentle sex muscles in on crime, along with some very shocking statistics on the part the female sex is playing in crime categories in the United States. Your free copy of this special issue of the GN, the Good News on Youth and Crime, is on its way to you right away as soon as you dial the toll-free number 800-423-4444. Or if you live in Alaska, California, or Hawaii, the number is area 213-577-5225.
I'm 18 years of age, and I'm in for murder, intent to commit robbery, and intent to commit murder.
What were the circumstances that surrounded that?
I'm gonna rob a little burrito stand, and just didn't turn out, you know, the way we wanted it to.
Most people seem to see these youths as more misguided, or perhaps misdirected, or neglected, or in some other way very much put upon by their parents and society, rather than really categorizing them as criminal. Although the offense may be very serious, society still seems to feel obligated to attempt to reform and to rehabilitate the youthful offender, rather than locking them up and throwing away the key, which might be more or less the way that they view an older person. However, as a society, we are just not naive. We realize we've got to protect ourselves. So the criminal justice system, as applied to youth, has to compromise somehow in a lock and key institution situation as between a rehabilitative one. In California, the juvenile or young adult convicted of a serious offense is usually committed then to the youth authority. The youth authority operates a handful of institutions around the state where security is tight and where efforts at rehabilitation are definitely tempered in an effort to protect society. As a general rule, the young people here have committed crimes that would have afforded them rather lengthy stays in state prisons if they had merely been a little older.
We have kids who have committed very serious crimes. If you took the 100 kids that got in trouble with the law, we would get the worst three out of this 100. George, you mentioned that there were a couple of guns involved in crime that you were involved with. Where did you get the gun?
From hypes that, you know, they needed a fix or something. So at that time, you know, it was real easy. Ooh, I'd say the most we probably paid for at that time would have been $20. And that ranged from anything from a handgun to a shotgun.
Most of the young men we get would have belonged to a gang before they came to us on the street. And some of the time, and maybe most of the time, a lot of their crimes are gang related.
This one is the gang that I'm a member of. And that's one of the cliques that's in the gang.
What kind of activities was the gang that you were a member of involved in?
Shootings, stabbings, beatings, and most of them, say about, I was involved in about 90%, you know, out of everything that was going on, because at that time I was trying to make a reputation for myself. You look for people, like the main ones from a certain, you know, gang, and once you find them, you just do it to them.
Do what to them?
Well, you know, it depends what you have at hand. If you have a gun, or if you have a knife, or if you don't have nothing at all, you know, if you're in a car, pull out a tire iron, bumper jack or something.
Talk about killing the guy?
No, beating him, you know.
Tony, could you tell us how old you are and why you're in?
I'm 18 years old and I got put in jail for attempted to commit murder.
Is this related to gang activity?
Yes. We were drinking, getting high, and we had a gun at the time, and we just decided to go cruising. And when we went cruising, we seen another guy from another gang that was Bartlett, and we asked him where he was from. He said Bartlett. Then we told him Lomas, and he started calling us names. So we got off, and one of us shot at him. And
is the youth authority really rehabilitating the kids that are here?
We would like to believe that. Sometimes I think the wards rehabilitate themselves in spite of us sometimes. However, we'd like to feel that what we offering are helping them rehabilitate themselves and ready themselves for community.
I think the California Youth Authority is, I think it will teach you more things that the streets will. Like, in other words, more criminal ways than you ever would think about in the streets.
What percent, how many of the guys that are here do you feel end up worse because they've been here?
90%.
Are worse?
90%. And I say 90% will come back too.
I'm speaking for myself, I can't speak for the Youth Authority, but my experience is that until a young man, he decides that he wants to change, we can present or have all the best programs in the world, but until he makes that decision, he's going to remain what he is, a juvenile delinquent.
If you had it to do over again, would you do it differently?
No, I don't think I would do it at all, period.
My goal is to get married and live a happy life. And, you know, support my family the best way I can. First, I'll teach them to respect each other, to respect the law, and not to break any laws, and not to go through the same thing I went through. Because it's miserable living the way I am.
Miserable living here?
Yes, while miserable living in jail, you're away from the people you care for, you're away from the people you love, and you can't do what you want. You gotta eat when they tell you to eat, gotta take a shower when they ask you to take a shower. You can't do these things, you know, can't do what you want in here. And I feel that every ward that's in here cries at night once in a while.
Out of what? Just out of frustration?
No, well, for being in here, just for being in here, you know, and just crying for the mistake they did, because the mistake they did don't pay. That mistake only took them not more than half an hour, and they're paying several months out of their life for that mistake.
Do you feel that you lost several months of your life that you'll never be able to get back?
Yes. Oh, yes.
If you will write for this current number of the Good News magazine, the GN as we call it for short, the special issue on youth and crime, we'd like to send it to you, and I'd like to highlight this one article on drugs, who needs them? This is another feature of this present issue we can send to you as an introductory copy of the Good News. It also highlights the fact that a tremendous amount of juvenile delinquents and youth violence is drug-related. Sometimes police think perhaps up to 50%. If you will dial right now the toll-free number 800-423-4444, or if you live in Alaska, California, or Hawaii, the number is area 213-577-5225. Well, today, with the streets of our big cities filled with every kind of petty criminal, with drugs so easily available, the youth oftentimes run afoul of those who are pushers or dealers or addicts themselves, and it's known in the juvenile justice system that a tremendous part of the youth scene can only be understood by looking into the drug scene in the United States. For example, they know that many of the most violent and brutal crimes are committed in drug-related offenses. Many youths find themselves entangled and implicated in crimes that surround the drug traffic, being pushers, or as you're going to see in one case, a marijuana buy that resulted in a murder. The risks are high, and what attracts the young people is that the rewards are sometimes sizable.
Well, I offered to sell marijuana to somebody who got shot and killed. And I called the police and told the police about the murder, and the police automatically arrested me for murder one, accessory to a murder, and offering to sell marijuana because they hadn't found the guys who had done it yet. And then they found them and dropped my charges just down to offering to sell marijuana.
How did you get involved with drugs in the first place?
I wanted to go out and, you know, meet other people, and I met the wrong kind of people, and that's what got me in trouble.
When you say you met the wrong kind of people, what kind of people are you talking about?
Well, people that are into drugs and people that commit murders.
Why was the person murdered?
They wanted his money. They wanted his $4,000, I guess, that he had, that he was going to buy the marijuana with.
Anita was committed to the California Youth Authority, where she spent about a year and a half. During the last few months of that term, she lived in an experimental institution called SPACE, SPACE, which stands for Social, Personal, and Community Experience, located in a fairly typical Los Angeles neighborhood. SPACE houses about 25 youth authority wards who are about to be released on parole. It was designed to combat the disturbing fact that in the first 6 months back on the street, a high percentage of youthful offenders get into trouble once again.
We go from a very strict confinement to what has become an unfamiliar atmosphere. So this program was designed to be a transition where you would do that very slowly under very strict supervision, and it gives the young people a chance to get out here and get a chance to try out the streets before they're absolutely free.
I got a job last week as a receptionist for a busing company on Wilshire.
Did you have any trouble getting the job?
No, I didn't.
We've got a very large color map available of Los Angeles County. So we use that map as a training device for people who are going out to look for jobs or to try to learn to get around in the city and county. And when you've been locked up for a long time, that's a big job to try to learn how to get around.
I don't go in when I go on a job interview and tell them I've been locked up. They don't need to know that unless they ask me. And then I'll be very honest about it and say, yes, I was.
What are your long-range goals? What do you want to do for the rest of your life?
Well, one of my goals right now is to move out of L.A. And I want to go back to San Diego County. I want to go to college and major in astronomy.
We are a very reality-oriented type of program, and that is that we say it's you're 18 now, you're a legal adult, and you're going to have to get your act together and do things on the street that keep you from getting arrested again. And so we focus on that, taking responsibility for yourself.
What if I came up to you and wanted you to sell marijuana again? What would you say?
I would tell you to get lost.
Why?
I've learned my lesson from it, like I've told you, and I've just decided, you know, that drugs aren't everything in life like I used to think. And I don't like marijuana anymore because it did lead me into other things, and it's leading other people into other things. I've learned my lesson. You know, being locked up was it was an experience, and I don't want to go through it again.
The young person who's actually been institutionalized and then is trying to transition back into a free life, or on the street again, as they might put it, oftentimes finds that transitional period very, very difficult. They need friends, they may need advice, they may need a place to stay, and love and consideration, and sometimes those are in very, very short supply. We wanted to explore further exactly how difficult that transition back to life on the street can be. So we talked with a young man who has been back on the street for several years and was able to reflect on the entire experience he had had of reintegration in normal society. The problems he talks about are serious, as evidenced by the fact that the large majority of adult criminals were once juvenile offenders, indicating that they were at one time or another not able to make that transition back to normal society. Jimmy Sims' trouble with the law began at 8 years of age when he was arrested for stealing a bicycle. From then on, he was in and out of juvenile institutions in Louisiana and California for theft, shoplifting, and burglary. His last incarceration was in a California Youth Authority institution from which he was released at age 21.
When I was released, first thing I said to myself was, I'm not going back. You know enough to stay out. And I kept pounding it into my head. And when I talked to my parole officer, I told him, I said, look, Mr. Reed, I said, I need some help. I said, I'll paint walls. I put pipes in for you. I do anything. I help the kids. I said, but just give me the little money I need to survive on.
Jimmy, how do people react to learning that you have a criminal record?
Well, they act negative toward it. You know, they think that because you have a bad record, they think that you're a bad person. You know, they don't look at all the possibilities that why that you committed the crimes. They just say, he's bad. So automatically, they exclude you. You become an outcast in people's lives. They don't want, you know, they just don't want to be around you.
Jimmy's transition back into society was made easier by his association with a now nationwide program called Volunteers in Parole. Volunteers in Parole brings recently released parolees into contact with attorneys who volunteer to fill the role of friend. Jimmy talks about his relationship with Los Angeles attorney Joe Austin.
Now, Joe gave me this trust that I needed, that build-up. Now, just this year here, last year, 75, during the summertime, we were swimming in this pool and everything, and I said, wow, I like to do this a little early. He said, well, you can do it. I said, Al, I see you're not at home. So he just said, well, I'll give you a key. And like, it kind of amazed me because this is the first time that someone has ever done me like this. You know, go give me a key to their house and they're not at home, you know. And he showed me a lot of trust, which gave me a lot of courage to even do more things for myself because of that trust.
Jimmy advises young parolees to pursue further education as a key to successful reentry into society. He himself attends technical school during the day where he's studying electronics. In the evenings, he attends Los Angeles City College. His long-range goal is to become a lawyer.
I like the way the judicial system is set up. It's the best in the world, the way it's set up. And I like the way it's organized. So I'd like to become part of it.
Can the ex-offender really ever be reaccepted fully into society?
No, because we got corporations who discriminate against you. Even the government discriminate against you. I can go to the government and ask them for a job working for the post office or any other agency, and they would turn me down because of my record. Okay, give you an example. I was working for the department store out on road in Los Angeles. And I worked there for 3 months, and I was their best worker. I started at $2.75 an hour, got a raise up to $3.25, and the clerk. And I was the hardest worker, and the man told me, he said, you got a good head on you, because I was doing the paperwork also. He said, I'm going to give you a higher position, make you assistant lead man. Now, the insurance company found out that I had been arrested and had a record. So they called me up to the office, and they said, you've been arrested. We can't bond you. And I said, why not? I said, I've been here 3 months, and you look at my work. I haven't taken anything from him. You know, they said, we're sorry. Like, when he terminated me, I walked down the ramp crying. I actually cried. And I told my wife about it. I told my sister about it. I actually cried. That's the first time tears ever ran out my eyes behind a job, because I was trying to do for self. And I figured that they didn't want me to do for myself. They wanted me to get out here and commit a crime. But I wasn't about to get out and commit a crime. See, before I commit a crime, I starve. Now, going through all these troubles, I still had it in my mind. Now, you're going through troubles. It's up to you to stay out of trouble. You know, don't let this cause you to go back into jail. Don't get out there and steal. You know, just suffer. If you don't have it, do without it.
We hope that by listening to some of these stories, personal ones, real life ones, you've gotten a little better picture of the complex system that is called juvenile justice. These kids and thousands of others are part of a broad problem that some have called absolutely hopeless. They see no way out of it one way or the other. In the final analysis, though, the problem may not be all that hopeless if we can find ways of keeping our children from getting involved with the law in the first place. Criminals are made, they are not born. There is such a thing as cause and effect, action and reaction. We have to look for the root causes of why child crime, especially pre-delinquent children, and why it is that some of the very youthful ages of 15, 14, and even lesser ages are showing up repeatedly in some of the most vicious of crime categories. I hope you'll write for this current number of the Good News, a special issue on youth and crime. It's yours absolutely free of charge if you will dial the toll-free number 800-423-4444 in California, Alaska, or Hawaii. The area code is 213. The number is 577-5225. Until next time, in a series of programs on juvenile justice, this is Garner Ted Armstrong saying goodbye, friends.
For the free literature offered on this program, write Garner Ted Armstrong, Pasadena, California, 91123. In Canada, Box 44, Vancouver, B.C. Or in the continental United States, you may call this toll-free number, 800-423-4444. That's 800-423-4444. In California, dial direct, 213-577-5225. All literature is free upon request.